Sal Lacana back on the Fan. One thing that's going to annoy me with the Mets is if they push Kodai Senga back yet again. This has got to be the time through the rotation to have him go on normal rest for multiple reasons. One, because he'd be at home on Sunday, which he's proven to be a better pitcher at home early on in his big league career. Also because it keeps Scherzer and Verlander on track to both start in Atlanta and have them both pitch in the two games at Citi Field against the Yankees, which will just be tremendous. You could say that they don't matter, it shouldn't be lined up like that, but they're not lining it up like that. It would just work itself out. I think so. Anyway, if you have Verlander today, McGill on Saturday, Senga normal rest on Sunday, that would mean Carrasco, and remember, there's an off day, so Carrasco would go on extra rest on Tuesday. And then again, Scherzer and Verlander. So that would be Atlanta Wednesday and Thursday. And then you'd have it right through the, you'd have McGill again on Friday night. See, this is where it could be tricky, where they could push Senga back then and not have him pitch on normal rest. And then if they do that, that screws up their rotation. Push Senga back. Let's say that they start, I don't know, Peterson or Lucchese or whatever. Push Senga back, then Carrasco. Oh, no, then you would still have... Unless I'm doing this wrong. I don't know. Anyway, I thought I lined it up the other day to where it would be. Remember, they have two off days coming up on the Mondays. Monday, June 5th, and then Monday, June 12th. I thought it was lined up to where you'd have Scherzer and Verlander going together again against the Yankees. So, either way, I do not want to mess with, especially for the Atlanta series, do not want to mess with Senga, because if you push him back, now you push Verlander back to Pittsburgh as opposed to Atlanta. Eric is calling from Yonkers. What's up, Eric?
Hey, Sal, how are you?
Good, Eric. How are you?
All right. I hate to, you just said you don't listen to other hosts.
Right.
And I feel bad about this conversation.
Why?
Because I was going to complain about one of your hosts.
No, then call them. I don't want to hear about it.
So Wait. They said...
I don't
you
care.
You can't be... You, all right, I'm going to complain. You can't be a Yankee fan and a Met fan at the same time. How? Or you can't be a Met fan and a Yankee fan at the same time. How? I'll show you how. When the Yankees are playing Atlanta, who are the Mets rooting for? And if the Mets are playing Tampa Bay, who are the Yankees rooting for?
Mm-hmm.
They're totally wrong. It's interleague now. It's interleague.
Yeah, I mean, I think the point is you can only be a fan of one team, like a real fan of one team. It doesn't mean you can't root for two teams.
Yeah, you're right. But you can still root.
Right. Yeah, okay, but...
It's New York, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can root for whoever you want to. Right? New York or not, you can root for whoever you want to. Nobody makes the rules on that. It's
all right, but there was one of your hosts complaining you can't be both.
Well, why didn't you call them? It's the same number. It's the same number. You should call them next time, Eric. Thank you for the call. I appreciate you taking the time to listen and give us a call. But if you have an issue with something, I mean, that's what sports talk radio is supposed to be. You know, I figured we'd talk about the Mets and Yankees tonight. I did not think I would have to teach what sports talk radio is based upon. When a host, me in this particular case, gives an opinion, you can call and counter with your opinion. You could call and agree. You could call and talk about whatever it is that's on your mind that you want to get off your chest about whatever topic we're discussing here. If another host, not me, says something, you call that host, not me. Like if I say something, hey, the Yankees are going to win the World Series, are you going to call tomorrow morning and talk to Tiki and Tierney and be like, hey, I was listening to Licata last night. He said the Yankees are going to win the World Series. What's wrong with this guy? Or are you going to call me up? Right? I mean, think about it. As far as the fandom goes, you could root for wherever you want. But what a true fan is, it's like the people that were getting on me for wearing an Islanders jersey, going into the Islanders box. They make me a jersey with my name on it. What do you want me to do? Tell them no? Spit on it? I grew up a Ranger fan. I'd be an idiot if I did that. Just because I wear an Islanders jersey and maybe root for the Islanders that particular night, or like to see the Islanders have success because I think the owner is a good person, because I like the front office, all the reasons why I would root for the Islanders, does not mean I'm an Islander fan. I'm a Ranger fan. I can't take that out of me. I grew up a Ranger fan, investing all my time and energy into them. That's where my fandom lies. I could root for the Islanders. I'm not an Islander fan. Never was, never will be. By definition of what a fan is. At least in my own terms. And really should be everybody's terms. You're either a Mets or a Yankees fan. I know people that root for both, but here's the way that I would describe being a fan, in addition to what I just said. If you feel pain from a loss from a team, that's being a fan. Not just financially based either. You know, you'll feel pain, obviously, if you bet the Heat and the Nuggets, you know, wipe them out in four games, you're going to feel pain. That's a different kind of pain. That's pocket pain. I'm talking about fan pain. Like if the Islanders lose or get swept or when they got eliminated in the postseason, I felt nothing. When the Rangers lost, I felt pain. You see the difference? If you say you root for the Mets and Yankees, that's great. But one of them should cause you pain. Maybe more so than the other. I mean, maybe there are some people that are legitimately fans of both. Root for New York. That's fine too, I guess. It's just it was never for me. But if you feel pain when your team loses, that's the team that you're a fan of. Charlie is calling from Brooklyn. What's on your mind, Charlie?
Hey, Sal. How you doing, man? I love the show. I love you. I'm telling you, you're the greatest.
Thank you, Charlie. I appreciate that. What do you got for me tonight?
I had a point. You know, they keep bringing this up on the radio when I listen to the Met games. They talk about how the Mets are basically undefeated when their starting pitchers go six innings, right?
16-0, I think, yeah.
Yeah, so I was just wondering what you think about that. You know, is that something that you think is significant or just, you know,
I do. I don't think it's sustainable, but I do think it's significant because it shows you their formula. That is how they are built, to get a quality start, 5, 6, 7 or more. They need that from a starter, and then everything falls into place there. Generally, if you have a starter that's going six innings, let's say, it means he's keeping you in the game at the very least. Their offense is good enough to overcome a deficit that is there to keep them in the game. Let's say it's 3 runs, you know, 4 runs at the worst. The Mets could chip away. The Mets can, you know, hit some long balls as they've shown here in recent weeks. Plus, the way that their bullpen has been used, the way that their bullpen has been working, dating back to last year, they don't blow many leads. So it's been that formula. I do think there's something to it.
Right. No, that was my other point. That I feel like the bullpen was being overused a little too much, you know, these games where the starting pitchers were going 5 innings, the bullpen was getting tired. We've seen over the past 3 games, if you give the bullpen some rest, they can manage the rest of the last 3 innings of the game pretty well. 3 runs over 3 games, that's amazing.
Well, and also, Charlie, look at it this way. You only have, if Max Scherzer goes 7 innings, you don't need that many arms in the bullpen, right? If you get a guy that goes 6 innings,
right,
you don't need that. You need 3 guys or 3 innings out of your bullpen as opposed to 4 or 5 innings every night out of your bullpen. That's going to take a toll on you. So the fact that you could maybe use 2 innings or 3 innings out of the bullpen, much easier for Buck to manage through that.
All right, thanks, Sal. I love the show. I'm telling you, you're the greatest. Keep it going. You rock, man.
Thank you, Charlie. I appreciate that. Thanks for listening, and of course, for the kind words. I mean, everything goes off of, it sounds obvious, but the Mets are specifically built like this. They are built to have success based off of what the starter gives them. You know, in other words, the Yankees could go out there and bludgeon a team and score 10 runs in back-to-back nights. Now, they're obviously built, the Yankees are built to go in a World Series where they have the rotation as well. They have the best bullpen in baseball, at the very least by ERA, if you don't think it is the best bullpen. And they may not have the lockdown definitive closer, but they have the best bullpen as far as ERA goes in Major League Baseball and a lot of different options there. Anyway, they've gotten good starting pitching. They have the potential to have even better starting pitching when they get more guys back healthy, but they are built to score a ton of runs. The Mets are not. The Mets are built paying $43 million per for Scherzer and Verlander, and not to mention the other guys in that rotation that they brought in, Senga or Jose Quintana. Hopefully he comes back soon. He's working his way back. They are built to have guys go out there and give you 6, 7 innings, which then should shorten up the bullpen and also keep your team in the game to where you're not getting in such a hole offensively. And, you know, they can keep the line moving offensively, come up with some timely hits, maybe a timely home run, and win some ball games. That's how they're built. So they need these 6 innings more so than other teams. But obviously any team would benefit by getting 6-7 innings from your starters. Certain teams don't have the horses. The Mets do. They were built to have those horses. And you're starting to see it play out. Mickey the Gravedigger calling from the Bronx. Mickey?
Yo, Sal, my man. What's going on?
How are you this evening, Mickey? How are we doing?
I'm doing actually really well. I had a really nice Thursdays. Me and my dad, me and my pop, actually call him Pop, we go out for pizza. And
where do you go?
We have a nice pizza spot, you know, nice thin crust. We like it a little crispy and a little thin crust.
So do I. Where is this spot? This is in the Bronx?
No, it's out in Jersey by my parents' house.
Where's that? And can you name the spot or no?
Yeah, I can. It's called Cousins Pizza. It's in Rivervale.
Cousins Pizza. Never heard. I might have heard of it, but I don't think I've ever been there. Anyway, I'd check it out if I'm ever there.
Yeah, I'll bring you a slice whenever, whatever.
All right.
You know,
appreciate it, yeah.
Listen, I'm fired up right now. Let me get fired up because these people, you know, like we talked about, like this guy called in before. This is Sal Licata's show. Sal Licata, okay? You want to talk to anybody? You talk to Sal, not about anybody else. Mm. What I've noticed about is that every single person that calls in and complains about another team, they're not even a fan of that team. So stop. I said it the other night. Worry about your own team, and we'll worry about our team. And people can watch the Mets and root for them, and watch the Yankees and root for them. And do you remember how we became friends, Sal?
How's that?
It's actually when you sat in the box at the Islander game. Remember?
You called and talked about that? I don't recall.
Yeah, and remember I said, oh, Sal. I said, Sal, I don't mind you. How could you sit next to Pop Van's family? You started dying.
Yeah, that's a good right. I mean, that was tough. Sitting in the owner's suite is one thing. Sitting next to Dennis Potvin and his family, that's a whole nother thing.
But another thing, I wanted to talk about this the pitch count. And the Yankees lost the game last night because of their bases loaded, and that's it. But in the beginning, I loved the pitch count, and I did.
The pitch clock you're talking about.
Yeah, pitch clock. And me and my old man, we were talking about this game's been around for 120 years, and it's been working perfect ever since. So, you know, he's not a fan of it, and he turned me not into a fan of it. Because these older players, right, it's too much on their arm after pitch after pitch after pitch. These younger guys are going to be conditioned to it, but it affects guys like Cortez, right? They're wondering why he can't do that, because he's a mastermind of trickery, of standing on there, moving his legs around, you know, wait.
Different arm angles and stuff. Did you hear what Scherzer said after today's game? He basically said, and I kind of agree with this, I'm not a huge fan of the pitch clock, although I do like that these games move along now. It's amazing to me how just putting in the pitch clock can shave off, it feels like, an hour and a half on these games.
Yeah, I have a thing about that.
But Scherzer said, Mickey, after the game today, that it shouldn't need to be policed with a clock. If the umps, you know, can use some logic and get the players to speed it up a little bit and not waste time getting in the batter's box and have pitchers not standing around on the mound, just stop with the waste of time, it shouldn't need to be timed necessarily to where you have guys that are getting penalized by a second or two, which is ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. Because these guys need a rest. And then what I'm mad about is that last night, right, is that game went into extra innings, right? And it was shorter than a regular game of last year, right? So we were in the 10th inning, and the game was shorter than a regular game without a pitch clock, right?
And I will say that I hate the extra inning rule, too.
Why do you need to put a man on second base?
You don't. Jeff Nelson, I think, said it during the game, or I saw somebody tweet that he had mentioned it. He's right. I don't mind putting a guy on second base. It should not be right out of the gate in extra innings. Let some extra innings play out. Let's play the 10th or the 11th. Maybe start that in the 12th inning if you want. But I'd rather have extra innings because it cheapens the game, putting the runner at second base in that spot.
Especially if the game is not longer than it was last year. I mean, if it was like if it was late and was running, we were under the inning.
Excellent point. With the speed of the game now changed. No, it's an excellent point, Mickey. And as always, we thank you for the call. Appreciate you checking in. You bring up a great point. With the speed of the game now significantly better, the pace of play, the speeds of the game, you know, 2.5 hours, whatever it is, the average of it, it feels like it's 2 hours and 20 minutes on average. I'm sure it's higher than that overall, but these games are flying right by. Then you shouldn't feel the need to have extra innings rushed along with a runner at second base right out of the gate. I'm not saying you don't have to do it. I understand why that was put in there. But why not just do it then in the 12th inning or the 13th inning? Oh, here we go to the 13th, still tied. Let's get the extra runner at second. That's fine. So you prevent having to go that much deeper into these games. Now, I also know a big part of it is pitching, and they don't want to use pitchers. It's not just the length of the games. It's also about preserving pitchers' arms. But still, I mean, we're talking about two-inning difference here. I don't know. It just feels, I feel it. Watching baseball all my life, and by the way, the pitch clock has to me been insignificant this year. Overall, the games are moving by faster, but as far as watching the game, I thought initially it would feel rushed. I do not feel that at all watching a baseball game. It doesn't feel rushed to me at all. But I do feel different when, oh, the game goes to extra innings. It's like the Yankee game last night would have been great drama. Scoreless game, going to the 10th inning. You feel differently about a game when the runner is placed at second base. I'm just like, oh, well, that's it. This game is over. One way or another, it's ending here soon, and it's going to be cheaply done. It cheapens the game. 100% cheapens the game. It feels like a shootout in hockey. Entertaining in hockey, of course. I understand why they do it, but it cheapens it. 877-337-6666. Continuing with your calls, Sal Licata on the Fan. Sal Licata back on the Fan. It's funny, I watch, and again, not that I'm into it, but I have it on. I'm sitting here, there's a TV in front of me. I might as well have it on the NBA Finals. And I'm watching the Nuggets beat up on the Heat a little bit here early on. First half almost over. Denver's up 52-40. But the larger point is, I was just thinking to myself as I'm watching the NBA Finals with the Miami freaking Heat in there, I remember going to game one, round two, on that Sunday afternoon with my wife. We had a lot of fun going to a couple of Knicks games during this run. And thinking even after the Knicks lost game one, if you remember, Brunson didn't have it. You know, Randall was hurt, but Brunson didn't have it. And the Knicks lost a game that they had a big lead in the first half. I remember coming away from that game thinking, you know what? The Heat aren't that good. They're not that good. The Knicks can really win this series. Going in, I was a little skeptical because everybody's like, oh, the Knicks are going to beat Miami. The Knicks. I'm like, no. Jimmy Butler's dangerous. This team just beat Milwaukee. I'm not betting against Miami. Now, obviously, I was going to be rooting for them. But I was skeptical going in. And then I watched game one, and I thought to myself, I don't think the Miami Heat are that good. And here we are, the Heat are in the freaking finals. And they played good team basketball. They're well coached, obviously, but they don't have that type of talent. They have one star. Where are the three stars? How many years have we sat here in New York talking about the Knicks need three stars? You need three stars to be able to compete in the NBA. Who's going to be their stars? Who's even now? It's like, all right, well, Brunson could be that guy. Who's the number one guy to go along with Brunson as a number two, Randall or RJ as a number three? Where are those other stars? Well, who the hell are the stars on the Miami Heat? Outside of Jimmy Butler, where are the stars on the Heat? And they're in the finals. That's BS. It's not true anymore, or at least in this particular case. Maybe it's changing now. But the NBA has felt more open the last couple of seasons than in years past, especially this year. Maybe things are better than for the Knicks with that being the case. I thought people were nuts talking about the Knicks being a team that could have gone to the finals. But heck, I mean, if Miami is there, why couldn't the Knicks? A team that they took to six games, Not that it was ever really close to getting back to the Garden for a Game 7, but it wasn't like they got blown out in that Game 6. And like I said, Game 1, the Knicks had the big lead. And if not for Jalen Brunson being off his game, maybe they would have had a shot. Anyway, it's just frustrating sitting here watching the Heat, thinking about it. It'd be one thing if it were the Bucks and the Nuggets. And you'd be like, okay, well, it was expected. The Bucks were a top team, whatever. The Heat, and I know the Heat are better than a traditional eight seed, but where are their three stars? 877-337-6666. We were talking about Harrison Bader a little bit earlier on and whether or not the Yankees should sign him to an extension. Joe was in Comac. Joe, what's on your mind?
Yo, what's up, Sal? How you doing, man?
How are you, Joe?
I'm doing good. Yeah, I don't know, man. I can't get over Bader. He's just frustrating. He just frustrates me. I don't see the value in him. I think he was a good pickup last year to catch some lightning in a bottle, quick thing before the playoffs. But I just don't see him as a long-time, a permanent fixture out there in center field.
Interesting. I mean, I like Bader. What don't you like about him? Just the injuries?
He's so injury-prone. He's been in the league since 2017. He hasn't played a full season yet.
Yeah, I mean, look, with Bader, I feel like it's worth the risk. Now you got to keep him healthy at the right time. Maybe the Yankees can manage him. I know he got hurt again, but maybe the Yankees could try to manage him to keep him healthy, keep him fresh. It's frustrating, but who are the better options in center field? I mean, what are you going to do if not for Harrison Bader?
I would put Judge in center field.
Yeah, I don't like that idea long term because then I worry about his health. I said the same thing last year. He was great there last year. But yeah. Hey, you still need another outfielder. Then what are you going to do? Go get a corner outfielder?
Yeah. No, I get it. It's just one of those things. It's almost like a lose-lose situation. And I don't know if you've noticed this, but his arm seems terrible this year.
Bader, you talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw him overthrow the – was it the catcher?
Oh my.
Yeah, that was a bad throw the other night.
You know, like three times in one week, I was so frustrated watching him. Missing the cutoff man and just throwing the ball over the field. And now, like, these lollipop throws.
Yeah, no, look, I'm not going to get down on Bader, especially for his defense. I'm not saying he's going to make a perfect throw every time. Here's what I love about Harrison Bader. I love the fact that he's a gold glove center fielder. I love the fact that he hits in the clutch with the big home runs last year in October. And I love the fact that he brings an edge to him. There's an edge to his game, and he brings the edge along with him to the team. And that, to me, was clear in the series that he returned at the Trop. Prior to that, I was like, oh, big deal, Harrison Bader's coming back. They really need Judge back. But with Bader back, there was a difference in this team, and he came up clutch even in that series. So he's proven himself enough to me. If he could stay healthy, big if, I think he's a big difference maker in center field for him.
All right.
And a perfect compliment, too. Remember, Joe, and thank you for the call. And look, I respect your opinion on it. I get it. But to me, what's the risk? Big deal. I mean, the Yankees have wasted money far worse than that. What's the big deal? You sign him to 5 years, $90 million. He can't stay healthy? All right. And same thing as Aaron Hicks. It's not a big deal. It's not going to hamstring the Yankees and prevent them from going out there and getting other players if need be. I would take a chance on a guy like Harrison Bader. He's still young enough. He's 29 now. Where did I read the other day? I was reading the other day that he was 28. No, I got that wrong. When's his birthday? His birthday is... No, that's his debut. Yeah, he's 20. Yeah, he is 28. But he'll be... Okay, June 3rd, that's why. He is 28. He will be 29 in a couple of days. No wonder why. I was reading these articles talking about him as a 28-year-old. Then I'm looking at Baseball Reference right now and has him as a 29-year-old. Well, he'll be 29 in 3 days exactly. Anyway, he's still young enough to where there's still some potential in there. It's not like he's broken down over 30. Man, he's in his 20s. He'll be 29 next year, you know, for the start of next year. I would trust Bader. And I think that, forget about even trusting him, you almost need to. He's the best option at center field. There are no good center fielders in Major League Baseball. Or there are very few of them, and there are none that are available. It's why it was incredible what the Mets were able to do with Brandon Nimmo. He turned himself into one of the best center fielders in baseball. Never thought that was going to be possible with the way Nimmo played defense. He's got no arm. I don't even think he could hack it as a corner outfielder. Offensively is one thing. He's proven to be an impact offensive player. But defensively, what Brandon Nimmo has been able to do, remarkable. But it's not just defensively with Bader. It's what he brings as far as that edge goes, the intangibles, the clutch factor. He's the perfect complement to what the Yankees need. I wouldn't, you know, if I'm the Cardinals or the Angels or whatever, I'm just throwing teams out there. It's not like I'd be clamoring for Harrison Bader. I think he's a perfect Yankee. Brody is calling from Waterbury, Connecticut. Brody, you want to talk about the Mets? What do you got for me?
Yeah, so I'm going to change my topic real quick, but it's about the Mets, just something different. So, you know, I don't think people are giving Cohen enough blame as they should just because he's spending a lot of money. I mean, it doesn't help the team if he's spending $170 million, if he's spending it the wrong way. And the other thing I have is why he hired Epler. If the only reason he hired the guy was to get Ohtani, you're telling me that he put his trust in the entire team to get one player.
Where do you get that the only reason why he hired Epler was because of Ohtani?
Well, was it because of his past success? Because there really is none.
No, I mean, I think it was in large part due to his familiarity with a big market, with this market in particular, coming up through the Yankee system, his experience, all of the above. Yeah, I mean, I think it's the total baggage. I've said this before, and I'll stand by it. Whether or not Billy Epler proves out to be the guy or not, I think he was the right hire, the perfect hire for the Mets at this particular time. For this particular job, I think Billy Epler was the perfect hire.
So, let me put it this way. Who do you think signed Scherzer and Verlander? Was that Cohen or Epler?
Great question. I mean, I think you or I could have signed Scherzer or Verlander. I would assume that Billy Epler.
Right.
I would assume Billy Epler went to Cohen and recommended that, and then Steve Cohen obviously gave the approval. Steve Cohen was the one who probably, you know, got the deal done, meeting with Scherzer and his family, same thing with Verlander, going out to dinner and obviously agreeing to pay that much money. But it doesn't take a baseball savant to recommend signing Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander.
Which is why I think it might be going. And thinking about it this way, those two players, their salaries are more than what the Rays make as a team combined.
Right. Which is why if they fail with this same format again, and thank you for the call, Brody, then Epler deserves to take some criticism. The idea, I believe, is Billy Epler saying, okay, well, if this is the amount of money that we have to spend, I would prefer to go out there and spend it on top-tier pitching, Scherzer, Verlander, as opposed to spreading it around on lesser guys, which I can't argue with. I like that philosophy. My only issue is, after they saw it blow up last year, because remember, you could joke around about the Mets collapsing and all that stuff. They didn't collapse. They didn't play well in September, but they didn't collapse. They tied for the division, lost it on a tiebreaker. However, they did have things lined up the exact way that they would want. If you could have told the Mets from the beginning of last season, draw up the scenario, you're going to have a chance to clinch the NL East. All you have to do is win one game in Atlanta, second to last series of the year, and you're going to have Scherzer, DeGrom, Bassett lined up for you. Or DeGrom, Scherzer, Bassett lined up for you. The Mets would have taken that every time, 100 out of 100 times, because that's how the team was built, on Scherzer, DeGrom, Bassett. So after they saw that fail, not once, but twice, because that was the same exact thing in the postseason, if you could have told the Mets, all right, you're not going to win the division, but you're going to make the wild card, and you're going to have Scherzer, DeGrom, Bassett lined up, you take that, and you take your chances. And they got beat again. So after seeing that, my initial reaction was, maybe you shouldn't be so heavily reliant on the starting rotation. Maybe you should try to balance it out a little better. and they doubled down. Not with the same guys, but they replaced DeGrom with Verlander. Can't argue that. They replaced Bassett with Senga, Taijuan Walker with Quintana, and so on. But they never upped the offense. Although, right now, I would say, and I did say this earlier, I think the Mets' offense is better than it was a year ago because of Francisco Alvarez, because of Brett Beatty, because of the impact that, specifically Alvarez, but really that those two have had on two weak spots last year. Remember, last year was DH, catcher, third base, big problems. Well, they fixed two of those three. They have also upgraded on the bench with Escobar over Luis Guillorme. He's better offensively. Tommy Pham, better offensively than Tyler Naquin, let's say. Canna the same. Nimmo maybe a little bit better. Marte obviously a lot worse, but maybe he gets going as he starts to get healthier into the year. Alonso, McNeil, Lindor. But they're better offensively. They just need to fix the DH spot. Anyway, if it doesn't work this year with that pitching, meaning it's got to be healthy, and then it's got to produce down the stretch and in October. If it doesn't work, then maybe Epler should take a hit on his decision on how to build this roster going so pitching heavy as opposed to a more balanced team and maybe a better, a more potent offense. 877-337-6666. More your calls on the other side. Sal Licata on the Fan. Mets with a big series win, sweeping the Philadelphia Phillies as they return home, starting to play some much better baseball. Now the results are showing. Can they keep it going against Toronto this weekend? Verlander on the mound for the Mets tonight. Mets have won, is that right, 8 straight at home? 1, 2, 5, 6, 7. Yeah, 8 straight at home. Look at that. A little home cooking at Citi Field, right? Because they swept the Guardians, won the last two in that Tampa series, and then have won the first three here against Philadelphia. So looking to keep the home cooking going this weekend. It'll be a big day tomorrow. I was going to say tomorrow. Tomorrow night, Verlander. Saturday, a big day with the Mets Hall of Fame induction. And it's so weird getting older. Isn't it weird? Guys that you grew up watching, and I know they're from different eras, but still, for me, Hojo, I remember him as a kid, you know, whether it be with the 86 Mets or then taking a more prominent role a little bit later on in the 80s or the 90s. And Al Leiter, of course. I mean, how could you not love Al Leiter? 99, 2000. I used to yell at the gate, sit him down, Al! You know, I loved Al Leiter. Terrific personality, a great Met. And it's cool to see those guys, but you know, get into the Hall of Fame. But it is a sign of getting older. These guys are going to the Mets Hall of Fame. And then you got Gary Cohen and Howie Rose going in. How cool is that? I mean, this has got to be one of the great days of this franchise history because you get two ultimate fans who worked their way from fandom sitting in the upper level at Shea Stadium, as they've both told many times. Watching games and, you know, doing games, you know, as a young kid, trying to bring the tape recorder to a game like that. Think about that. Going to games as a young fan, like a lot of us, whatever team it is that you root for, from that to being inducted into the team that they grew up rooting for's Hall of Fame. That is an incredible honor and very rare. You know, broadcast Hall of Fame, radio Hall of Fame, whatever. But to be in the teams, the Mets Hall of Fame, like Gary Cohen, as big a Mets fan as there is, Howie Rose, as big a Mets fan as there is, to be able to be in the Mets Hall of Fame, incredible. And to go on the same day, that's pretty cool. 877-337-6666. Continuing with your calls, Mets, Yanks, whatever else is on your mind. Evan is in Hoboken, New Jersey. Evan?
Hey, Sal, how you doing?
How are you, Ev?
Good. I just wanted to say, big fan. I really respect your passion for the Mets, so keep killing it. But
thank you.
Really wanted to talk about Buck today.
Mm-hmm.
As a member of the media, you know, us fans really rely on you guys to hold Buck accountable, and he continues to make so many mind-boggling decisions. And I understand he's a well-respected elder veteran of the game, but, you know, there comes a point in time where this guy can't keep getting away with all these moves.
Well, give me an example. Yeah, give me some examples here.
Okay, well, he has a Daniel Vogelbach fetish. He is constantly playing Daniel Vogelbach, a guy who has a higher on-base percentage than his slugging percentage, over a guy he's stunting Mark Vientos' growth.
For what?
Well, that is an issue. I mean, to me, that's the only issue that I could have with Buck Showalter, is that I personally would rather see Vientos, but I am also going to respect that Buck may not like whatever he sees about Vientos. I'm not sure what exactly that is. And the other thing is, it's just anti-Vogelback. Like, I can't understand why Buck would like Vogelback at all. So that one I don't understand. I'm with you there.
And going back to maybe about a half hour ago, I was listening to the show. You said something about how the Mets are very bad at evaluating talent. And there's a good example with how they said Francisco Alvarez was nowhere near ready, when that's just not the case with the veteran guys in the clubhouse, continuously giving him high praise. I mean, you have to think that has something to do with him like liking Vogelback, because he is clearly not good, and he just continues to play his day in.
But that's not, to me, that's not on Buck. Like, who brought Vogelback in?
Epler. And I have my issues with Epler as well, but I mean,
and Alvarez too, to stick with your Alvarez point for a second. You know, that's not, I mean, maybe that's a collaborative decision, but that's Billy Epler ultimately. He's the one who's going to decide if Alvarez is down or if he's up. But the fact that, and look, maybe Buck doesn't like the young players. I mean, maybe there's something to that. It wasn't like he was speaking glowingly of Alvarez. Matter of fact, Buck said, now that you mention it, Buck said before the year, if everything goes well, I think he might have even said, I hope not, in reference to Francisco Alvarez being up with the Mets at some point this year. This is before the season started. He said, I hope not. It wasn't a knock on Alvarez, but he's saying basically that would mean that something went wrong with our catching. Guess what? He was wrong on that, because without Alvarez, the Mets are a shell of what they are offensively.
Absolutely. You know, the length he brings to the lineup and the way he plays defense. I was just saying this to one of my buddies the other day. Watching him behind the dish, like the confidence that he brings to the table, I think he just flipped the switch overnight a few weeks ago. He's a completely different player.
Agreed. It's not just the results. It's also the way he does it. You're right about the confidence. You saw last year and early this year a kid who was trying to find his way, a kid who was trying to find his confidence, a kid who was maybe unsure of if he was going to have big league success. And then all of a sudden it started to click, and now you're seeing a kid who knows he belongs in the big leagues, and he's dominating.
Yeah, it's really great to see. And another thing, so I'm at the game today with a few of my boys, and we're booing Vogelback at the top of our lungs, and everyone around us could do nothing but laugh. And you know why? It's because they know that it's so true how bad he is. And, you know, I think as fans, we really need to start holding Buck more accountable for these decisions, because he has some talent that he could bring to the table and not hold in the dark for so long, when he has a guy like Vogelback who's not producing any runs. And you have Vientos, who just wants to produce runs, constantly taking vicious hacks at the plate. I mean, you saw today; he had an amazing at bat. I don't understand.
So, yeah, no, I think you look. I think you bring up a good point. Now, you know, I love, and thank you for the call, Evan, and for the kind words. You know, I love Buck. Merry Buckmas. Couldn't be happier when they hired Buck Showalter, a real manager, to actually manage the team. First one that they've had since Terry Collins, a real manager. But this has not been the best showing for Buck, because he had to have had, the way that he talked about Alvarez, he had to have had some say in that decision. I'm not saying it was his, but he clearly was not a fan of turning it over to Alvarez at any point this year. I hope not. Otherwise, things would go wrong. And he saw Alvarez right out of the gate, because things did go wrong. Narvaez got hurt. Alvarez is up. And Alvarez, in that time, took some lumps, but in that time has proven to be much more than capable defensively and an impact bat offensively, and far more. He's proven far more than any Mets catcher that I could remember in recent history, maybe even as far as to go back as to Paul Laduca, who, by the way, Alvarez is better than offensively and maybe defensively too, but Laduca was like the last legitimate major league catcher that was somewhat impactful that the Mets had, that I could remember. 877-337-6666. More of your calls coming up on the other side. Yankees, Mets, whatever else it is that you want to discuss on this Thursday night, going till 12 a.m. Fleegs. Michael Fliegelman will take you through the overnight. Sal Licata on the Fan. Mets with a big series win, sweeping the Philadelphia Phillies as they return home, starting to play some much better baseball. Now the results are showing. Can they keep it going against Toronto this weekend? Verlander on the mound for the Mets tonight. Mets have won, is that right, 8 straight at home? One, two, yeah, five, six, seven. Yeah, each trade at home. Look at that. A little home cooking at Citi Field, right? Because they swept the Guardians, won the last two in that Tampa series, and then have won the first three here against Philadelphia. So looking to keep the home cooking going this weekend. It'll be a big day tomorrow. I was going to say tomorrow. Tomorrow night, Verlander. Saturday, a big day with the Mets Hall of Fame induction. And it's so weird getting older. Isn't it weird? Guys that you grew up watching, and I know they're from different eras, but still, for me, Hojo, I remember him as a kid, you know, whether it be with the 86 Mets or then taking a more prominent role a little bit later on in the 80s or the 90s. And Al Leiter, of course. I mean, how could you not love Al Leiter? 99, 2000. I used to, you know, yell at the game, sit him down, Al! You know, I loved Al Leiter. Terrific personality, a great Met. And it's cool to see those guys, but you know, get into the Hall of Fame. But it is a sign of getting older. These guys are going to the Mets Hall of Fame. And then you got Gary Cohen and Howie Rose going in. How cool is that? I mean, this has got to be one of the great days of this franchise history because you get two ultimate fans who worked their way from fandom sitting in the upper level at Shea Stadium, as they've both told many times. Watching games and, you know, doing games, you know, as a young kid trying to bring the tape recorder to a game like that. Think about that. Going to games as a young fan, like a lot of us, whatever team it is that you root for, from that to being inducted into the team that they grew up rooting for's Hall of Fame. That is an incredible honor and very rare. You know, broadcast Hall of Fame, radio Hall of Fame, whatever. But to be in the teams, the Mets Hall of Fame, like Gary Cohen, as big a Mets fan as there is, Howie Rose, as big a Mets fan as there is, to be able to be in the Mets Hall of Fame, incredible. And to go on the same day, that's pretty cool. 877-337-6666. Continuing with your calls, Mets, Yanks, whatever else is on your mind. Evan is in Hoboken, New Jersey. Evan?
Hey, Sal, how you doing?
How are you, Ev?
Good. I just wanted to say a big fan. I really respect your passion for the Mets, so keep killing it. But
thank you.
Really wanted to talk about Buck today.
Mm-hmm.
As a member of the media, you know, us fans really rely on you guys to hold Buck accountable, and he continues to make so many mind-boggling decisions. And I understand he's a well-respected elder, veteran of the game. But, you know, it becomes the point. There comes the point in time where this guy can't keep getting away with all these moves.
Well, give me an example. Yeah, give me some examples here.
Okay, well, he has a Daniel Vogelbach fetish. He is constantly playing Daniel Vogelbach, a guy who has a higher on-base percentage than his slugging percentage, over a guy he's stunting Mark Vientos' growth.
That is an issue. I mean, to me, that's the only issue that I could have with Buck Showalter, is that I personally would rather see Vientos, but I am also going to respect that Buck may not like whatever he sees about Vientos. I'm not sure what exactly that is. And the other thing is, it's just anti-Vogelbach. Like, I can't understand why Buck would like Vogelbach at all. So that one I don't understand. I'm with you there.
And going back to maybe about a half hour ago, I was listening to the show. You said something about how the Mets are very bad at evaluating talent. And there was a good example with how they said Francisco Alvarez was nowhere near ready, when that's just not the case with the veteran guys in the clubhouse, continuously giving him high praise. I mean, you have to think that has something to do with him like liking Vogelbach, because he is clearly not good, and he just continues to play his day in.
But that's not, to me, that's not on Buck. Like, who brought Vogelbach in?
Epler. And I mean, I have my issues with Epler as well, but I mean.
And Alvarez, too, to stick with your Alvarez point for a second. You know, that's not, I mean, maybe that's a collaborative decision, but that's Billy Epler ultimately. He's the one who's going to decide if Alvarez is down or if he's up. But the fact that, and look, maybe Buck doesn't like the young players. I mean, maybe there's something to that. It wasn't like he was speaking glowingly of Alvarez. Matter of fact, Buck said, now that you mention it, Buck said before the year, if everything goes well, I think he might have even said, I hope not, in reference to Francisco Alvarez being up with the Mets at some point this year. This is before the season started. He said, I hope not. It wasn't a knock on Alvarez, but he's saying basically that would mean that something went wrong with our catching. Guess what? He was wrong on that, because without Alvarez, the Mets are a shell of what they are offensively.
Absolutely. You know, the length he brings to the lineup and the way he plays defense. I was just saying this to one of my buddies the other day. Watching him behind the dish, like the confidence that he brings to the table, I think he just flipped the switch overnight a few weeks ago. He's a completely different player.
Agreed. It's not just the results. It's also the way he does it. You're right about the confidence. You saw last year and early this year a kid who was trying to find his way, a kid who was trying to find his confidence, a kid who was maybe unsure of if he was going to have big league success. And then all of a sudden it started to click, and now you're seeing a kid who knows he belongs in the big leagues, and he's dominating.
Yeah, it's really great to see. And another thing, so I'm at the game today with my a few of my boys, and we're booing Vogelback at the top of our lungs, and everyone around us could do nothing but laugh. And you know why? It's because they know that it's so true how bad he is. And, you know, I think as fans, we really need to start holding Buck more accountable for these decisions, because he has some talent that he could bring to the table and not hold in the dark for so long when he has a guy like Vogelback who's not producing any runs. And you have Vientos, who just wants to produce runs, constantly taking vicious hacks at the plate. I mean, you saw today; he had an amazing at bat. I don't understand.
So, yeah, no, I think you bring up a good point. Now, you know, I love, and thank you for the call, Evan, and for the kind words. You know, I love Buck. Merry Buckmas! Couldn't be happier when they hired Buck Showalter, a real manager, to actually manage the team. First one that they've had since Terry Collins, a real manager. But this has not been the best showing for Buck, because he had to have had, the way that he talked about Alvarez, he had to have had some say in that decision. I'm not saying it was his, but he clearly was not a fan of turning it over to Alvarez at any point this year. I hope not. Otherwise, things would go wrong. And he saw Alvarez right out of the gate, because things did go wrong. Narvaez got hurt. Alvarez is up. And Alvarez, in that time, took some lumps, but in that time has proven to be much more than capable defensively and an impact bat offensively, and far more. He's proven far more than any Mets catcher that I could remember in recent history, maybe even as far as to go back as to Paul Laduca, who, by the way, Alvarez is better than offensively and maybe defensively too, but Laduca was like the last legitimate major league catcher that was somewhat impactful that the Mets had that I could remember. 877-337-6666. More of your calls coming up on the other side. Yankees, Mets, whatever else it is that you want to discuss on this Thursday night, going till 12 a.m. Fleegs. Michael Fliegelman will take you through the overnight. Sal Licata on the Fan.